Hello and welcome to another episode of the Black Business Psychology Network's podcast. I am your host, Dr. Grace Mansa-Owusu, and today we have a guest, another guest by the name of Yannick Yalapinde. And Yannick is currently a clinical associate psychologist, a trainee clinical psychologist in London in an NHS trust. And the acronym for that is CAP or CAP. And we'll be talking about a bit more about his role. The role is kind of in between the role of a qualified clinical psychologist or trainee clinical psychologist and an assistant psychologist role. So it's kind of in between the two, but we'll be talking and you'll be hearing more about the role and what he's been doing during the episode. Yannick is also the founding director of an initiative and a social enterprise called Black People Talk. And essentially it is a peer support group to support the mental health and well-being of the UK's Black community. So that's within workplaces, within community settings, and with education, and especially higher education. They're doing some great work at the moment, and their socials and everything will be linked in the description box if you're really interested to find out more about the work that they do. Also throughout this episode, as with everything in psychology, there's a lot of acronyms, so I thought I'd give you a bit of an kind of a background as to what those acronyms mean. So AP means assistant psychologist, so it's a role that many graduates in undergraduate psychology do after they graduate to gain more experience and exposure to clinical psychology or even educational psychology or even forensic psychology. It's relevant to a lot of psychological career paths. HCA is a healthcare assistant, which is a post in many NHS trusts. They work with nurses and other healthcare professionals to provide care to people, and that could be in mental health facilities and hospitals and wards, as well as general wards as well. And CAP or CAP is the clinical associate psychologist role, which is quite new to the NHS that Yannick has been doing since January of 2021. So that's just a little bit of a background. Also, myself and Yannick used to work together. He has actually left working at the BIP network. So the BIP network is BME in Psychology and Psychiatry. It's another organisation that I work with. And we speak a bit more about the work of the BIP network in this episode. And if you're interested in the work that the BIP network do, I will be linking the website of the organisation as well. Yannick has a really interesting journey into psychology, and it's not over yet. So he aspires to be a clinical neuropsychologist, actually. So stay tuned to this episode to listen to more. So good afternoon, good morning, good night, whatever time you're listening to this. Welcome to another episode of the Black Business Psychology Network's podcast. And today, as usual, we have a guest, and I'm going to ask him to introduce himself. So would you like to introduce yourself?
Okay. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. I really like that. I think that's a really cool way of doing things. But yeah, so I'm Yannick Yalapinde. I am the founding director of Black People Talk, a mental health organization that deals with Black people and their mental health. I am also a trainee clinical associate psychologist within the NHS in London.
Perfect. Thank you. And we will be talking about both of those things. And I'm not going to say especially the trainee clinical associate psychologist, because I'm stumbling over those words, because I know it's kind of a new role, newish role in the NHS. I only found out about it because I knew you had the job, and I was like, what is this? What is this? What is this thing? What's happening? So first of all, and this is a very broad question, how did you get in to this point in your career? So, you know, you're now a trainee clinical
associate psychologist,
but I'm assuming there's a lot of things that have happened before that to get you to this point. So,
let's go back. Let's go back to 2012 when I realized that psychology is what I wanted to do. Mm-hmm. And obviously before this, I'm just going to preface the fact that I am a mature student. Mm-hmm. So if timelines don't actually make sense, there's a reason for that.
It's fine.
And then, 2012, straight out of college, I thought to myself, I really want to go into psychology.
Mm-hmm.
Now, for certain, because of some life circumstances, I wasn't able to go straight into university.
Mm-hmm.
So I decided to gain experience and just to better understand just the field before I decide fully where I wanted to go.
Mm-hmm.
So I started off by, you know, volunteering once a week as a play center therapist. And
okay.
it was great. I did that for about 4 years. Yeah, I did that for four years, four full years of that. And so essentially what that role entailed was going to schools and having these sessions with the kids that I would see.
Mm-hmm.
And then sometimes after school, the kids would come to the headquarters and then I would have sessions with them at the headquarters.
Mm-hmm.
And then obviously I'd have a caseload. So on a Friday, I know that at 9:30, I have to be at this school.
Right.
At 10:30, I have to be they need some time in between to travel, but at 11, I had to be at that school. And it's mm-hmm. always a 45-minute session.
Right.
So obviously, you know, you have your bag of goodies, you might call them toys and various right. things that they could use to express themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah. And then we would have supervision at the end of the entire day at
okay.
like 5 for an hour, just to talk about the sessions, to talk about the different things that happen and to learn and to consolidate the knowledge and experience that we go through. Just, you know, typical supervision.
Mm.
And yeah, that was a great insight into psychology. And I was like, you know what, this is fun. I'm going to try my hand at this with adults. And then obviously towards right. the third year, I began and when things unlocked university wise,
mm.
I applied to Birkbeck for a year to do a, I applied to Birkbeck at that time I was working as, an operations manager
right.
at a company. So I didn't have the time to go to university as a normal student would.
Yeah.
So I needed to do evening classes.
Mm-hmm.
And that's exactly what I did. So I went to Birkbeck.
Mm-hmm.
I did psychology. I've forgotten what level degree it is. I think it's just a first year of university. It's like a foundation degree.
Foundation,
or,
yeah.
Or an associate's degree.
Yeah.
Again, like I said, being out of academia, and I'm quite a tentative person when it comes to things. Like I'm very considered in every move I make. I don't make a move unless I've thought it through completely and I'm
mm-hmm.
a couple steps ahead of it. So then I went into this tentatively, and that was my tentative attempt at
right.
re-entering academia. So I went
yeah.
to Birkbeck. I did my I did it. And then I thought I wanted to try my hand at the actual degree.
Mm-hmm.
So I applied to University of Bristol to
right.
study experimental psychology.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, then I moved to Bristol, got in the second year. So I transferred straight into my second year.
I was going to ask, did you have to start again? Because sometimes
Thank
kind of
God.
Foundation.
I know. They said, see, University of Bristol said that they usually don't, but then I
right.
went, but then I don't know, sometimes you just don't quit and you keep going at something and something unlocks.
Yeah.
So I kept going and I asked, and then lo and behold, I got an interview.
Thank goodness.
So I interviewed for the undergraduate course.
Brilliant.
Which is really funny. So I interviewed and they put me straight into second because, you know, I guess they wanted to test my knowledge of statistics and all that other stuff.
Yeah, all that good stuff.
I know. So I did okay. And I got on. So yeah, I got on and, big black guy, dreadlocks.
In
University of Bristol,
mm-hmm.
Which essentially is, yeah, that's where everyone that didn't make it into Oxford and Cambridge goes, essentially.
Do you know what? When I did my undergrad, there was talk that where I did my undergrad was an Oxford and Cambridge reject uni. I shouldn't say this.
This
might be edited
this,
out.
I was told that
it's true. Bristol, that is true of Bristol, Durham.
Yeah,
there's other places.
You get it. So I mean, it's still, it's really good.
Excellent.
It's damn good. But it's just it's just damn good. So I made it there, and I had a time.
How was it?
It was the thing is, it's like, imagine being in a desert. It's like being in a desert, and at plotted all over the place were little oases. So some of the teachers really believed in me. Some of the lecturers really believed in me and really just like wanted me to do well. And so I took solace in, you know, the mentorship ring that they provided me and the tips and stuff. And then I had a group of friends that were just like all mature students. And then we just like bonded over the fact that we were all mature students. And then right. that provided me with some solace in that arid sort of territory desert. Of desert of racism and microaggressions. I'll give you an example. Like, you know, when you it's something like coined being visibly invisible. It's mm-hmm. like, I'm a big black guy. You will see me.
Yeah.
You will definitely see me, but you will act like I'm not there. It's like, okay. you'd walk into a door, but you won't leave it open. And so, you know, you won't leave it open and stuff like that. So it's like, you know that I'm there. We see each other. We know that you see me, but you'll act like I'm not there. And then sometimes, you know, the looks and all that stuff. So what I would do is I developed this, I don't know if it's called blinders. The race horses have these blinders.
Yeah.
So sometimes my friends will be like, Yannick, I was waving at you frantically and saying hi, but you couldn't see me. And none of that's because it's a defense mechanism. Wow. I had the headphones in.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I had the blinders on and I couldn't see them because I knew that if I started being aware of my surroundings, I would just get re-traumatized. So I just did that. And that was my experience at university. It was difficult. Mental health hit me hard.
Wow.
As in mental health struggles hit me hard. Mm. I'm surprised I even made it with a 2-1. It was a struggle. And then I didn't have enough. I decided to go back for my master's.
Yeah, we all
and
then go
to,
back.
To be fair, one of the lecturers that believed in me recommended this particular master's and said that it would be something that if I want to go along a path which was clinical psychology, mm-hmm. this might be the good option to go for. So I did. So I tried it out, and it was a great course. So, just a little sidebar. When I started my master's, I didn't want to go through the same thing I went through in my undergraduate.
Yeah.
So I thought to myself, why don't I create something that I could? Yeah. That's where what now is BPT was created.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
back then it wasn't called BPT, it was called Black Men Talk.
Yes.
Because as a black man, I wanted to sort of like go through, you know, my own experience. I wanted to have my experiential expertise and to use that to create a group and for black men to come together. But then when mm-hmm. I saw how needed it was, I then said, let's make a black woman talk and have a black woman, also a psychology student, do the same.
Yeah.
Then we would have, you know, black women talk on one side, black men talk, and then black men and women talk. And it was relatively successful. We got a lot of, we made a lot of noise. It was pretty good. And from that, but the thing is, from that idea, I sort of started thinking a bit about how binary men, the concept of man and woman was.
Yeah.
And so then, I had that thought. And then when I met my co-founder, that thought was fully solidified.
Right.
Like my co-founder was like, yeah, this is not right.
Mm.
It's not that it's just that it's exclusionary. It's,
yeah.
It's we just want to leave the door open.
Yeah.
That's just literally what it is. Leave the door open and make the door a double door. Make it wide open. Like, not just a door that only fits a certain type, mm-hmm. a certain profile of a person. So leave the double doors wide open. That's essentially what we're doing. And then let whoever walks in make that space their own and let it be anyone.
Yeah.
And so that's why BPT, Black People Talk.
Right.
Now exists. And that's why also within the academic setting, Black Students Talk exists. And so I was doing that while doing my master's. You know, difficulty, COVID came, I had to sort of like defer my year. I'm even as we speak right now, I'm just completing it, as in like I haven't actually fully, because that COVID time when it hit, it completely just
threw everything.
It was a very difficult year.
Yeah.
But yeah, and so this entire time that I was in Bristol, I was working as a mental health social worker, a mental health social worker.
Right.
The entire time since I started my undergraduate. And then I did that for like a year and a half. And then I moved on to working as a HCA, a healthcare assistant.
Right.
In a mental health hospital. Mm-hmm. And essentially that hospital had, lucky for me, and this is a great thing from my experience, that hospital had 9 different wards. So there was going from PQ, psychiatric intensive care units, acute care, to like later life, to like step down. Step down is essentially the stage between, so it's like there's rehabilitation and then step down. And so this essentially, and then they had rehabilitation.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and then obviously they had male wards and female wards. And And as a HCA over there, I was a bank staff member. So I was hopping from ward to ward to ward to ward, experiencing what that was. And that further solidified my desire to go into clinical psychology, because I would see the clinical psychologists and what they were doing. And I also would see at that hospital that in the rehabilitation units and stuff like that, they were just like, you know, they were just the average person you would see, you know, a lot of... you just see the average person. But then in PQ units, the high intensity secure units, I would just see, there were so many Black men. It's almost as if, it's so funny how it was. It's like, it was until you had to do some training before you could work in the PQ unit, you know, PMVA and all that.
Yeah.
And it was, I hadn't done that yet. So I was only working in the lower intensity areas and things like the later life. And I was just seeing, you know, I was like, okay, this is Bristol. I'm going to see a lot of white people. That's all good. And then when I started working in the PQs, I was like, I walked into Little Africa. Like, this is, as in like, I walked into, and it's very telling of the sort of it's very telling of the world. These settings, even though that they are like mental health hospitals, they're microcosms of the world. Whatever the world is will be reflected in those little minute spaces.
Mm.
And that's essentially what I saw. And so that even that further gave me that zeal to want to go into clinical psychology. I was like, okay, I am going to be, And I didn't even see that many Black clinical psychologists. I saw the first one in like 2019, and that was like seeing a unicorn.
No, they are unicorns, especially in certain areas, like not in London. In London, it's not, you don't see that much either, but especially when you come out of London, it's even more scarce. So when... The last podcast episode that was released was with a clinical psychologist called Dr. Luke Brown, and he also did a PhD, but his PhD research was in help-seeking behaviours of Black males in the West Midlands, where he's from. And he basically said, and this is one of, obviously it's multifaceted, the reasons why Black people are overrepresented in mental health wards, etc., and get diagnosed later. But one of the reasons is the help-seeking behaviours. It seemed like the people he spoke to, they would have familial and community help, but it got to the stage when they were really bad before they were admitted into, into like wards, etc. So it kind of got left later, it got picked up later. That could be because of, you know, lack of people taking them seriously for GPs, or the kind of lack of trust between Black people and mental health in general. Like no one's going to go willingly when you know that your symptoms might be misinterpreted or wrongly diagnosed, etc., etc. So yeah, I just thought I'd add that in because it does link to the last episode that we released.
I 100% agree with you. It's a mixture of all of those factors that make that. It's like I always used to say that no one does something for only one reason, right? We all have multiple reasons for doing something. if someone tells you that I only did something for one reason, that has to be a lie, because it's a spectrum. It's like, there, maybe that's the major reason, but there are a couple of other little reasons involved. And that's the same situation as this. There might be a major reason, and that's the one that people talk about the most, but there are other little ones involved in this entire process. Yes, this element of not believing us. Because, and that's the thing, it's funny. Earlier today, I had I was at the launch for our national BP via national BST Black Students Talk sessions, in covering the whole of the UK.
Congratulations!
And whoop-dee, whoop-dee for that. I was saying that it's important that when these stories are told, when we're telling a narrative, our narratives are often ignored.
Yeah.
And discounted and just labeled as a lie. And it's pretty much the same in this. Like, if we come with, this is happening to me, they're not gonna outright say that this is a lie, but the intensity with which they would try to alleviate whatever we're going through is significantly less than others. Yeah. I mean, statistics show that, even when it comes to pain medication during childbirth, all of these statistics, people act like this is just an isolated case, but it obviously isn't. This sings a song. There's a narrative. This is a current. This is a flow. This is a river. It's there. You see it. There are fish swimming in it. Like, this is real.
I'm drowning in it.
Exactly. Like, this is, this is, I think that's definitely included in that. And then I think, man, there's just, I feel like, wait. So I was working at that job, and I was approaching the end of my master's. Uh-huh. And then I thought to myself, okay, everyone was telling me, okay, it's time for you. If you want to go into clinical psychology, you need an AP role as experience. Without an AP role, it's going to be very hard, or at least a PWP, or at least something. Like, you can't just be a HCA. It's like, it's for that to happen, it would be a miracle. So in 2020, like towards in the very, very midst of the pandemic, I was like, okay, I'm going to start applying to AP roles. So I applied. And I don't know for myself, because prior to that, I had never had any sort of interview or AP. I'd never applied for an AP role. I literally started in July.
Okay.
And people tell me that I had a relatively good experience, because I only applied to a total of, I would say, 19 places.
Sorry, that's so funny. That in psychology terms, that's a good experience. In every other terms, that's like, what, 19 roles?
Yeah, but I applied to 19.
I'm just going to interject. So AP is assistant psychology, PWP is psychological wellbeing practitioner. What's the other? And HCA is healthcare assistant, but you can be a mental health healthcare assistant. So for clinical psychology, a lot of people will apply to assistant psychologist roles, which are extremely competitive, to the extent where I've heard people who say they see an AP role advertised. They go and get this is literally a tweet, I think. They saw the role advertised. They went to get a drink. They came back and it was closed.
And it's gone. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's it. Because it was saturated. It was at capacity because so many people applied. But that was it for me. I applied to 19, and I still have them on the platform, on my NHS jobs platform. So I applied to 19 of them, and I think I get how many? In total, I had 7 interviews.
That's not a bad return, actually. Not a bad return at all.
I think somewhere between 7 and 8 interviews.
Brilliant.
And at that time, I was doing night shifts.
Yeah.
So the interviews would always land in the morning. And so I would literally come back, eat breakfast, have to stay up, and then do an interview. Because I was like, it's COVID. And I'm still working. I need to take advantage of this and make money. So so that's essentially what I did. So I applied to some AP roles. The first two were disastrous, but I learned a lot from them. And they were disastrous because I was high on fatigue. So
I was going to say, he wasn't high on anything else. He was tired, guys. Tired.
I was yes. When I say high, it's high off being tired. So so I was almost delirious. So I did those interviews. So they were abysmal, but that's okay. I learned from them.
Mm.
You know, the And then I think the fourth or the fifth was for a position in a neuropsychological department. And I got that. And it was a
Great.
band four, and I was really excited. I was like, okay, I'm gonna do this in Bristol. This is gonna be great. And then I saw a couple friends had spoken to me about this role, this new role called the CAP. They kept calling it the CAP, the clinical associate psychologist. And I was like, what is a CAP? And so from the little bit I was able to see, because I saw those roles come out. So I did apply for them. And from what I read, it's essentially the perfect balance between an assistant psychologist and a clinical psychologist, because it's like we're somewhat in the middle, as in like we do basically do pretty much a lot of what assistant psychologists do and a little bit of what clinical psychologists do. And but the way it's been set up, it's this new transformational thing that the NHS wants to do, which is to connect services better with the community. And to me, obviously, all the light bulbs in my home and in my head lit up. So
Great.
I was like, okay, this is amazing, because with Black in Black People Talk, when I in my initiative, I had been doing a lot of community
Of
activism. I
course.
start the, when I worked as a play therapist, it was with a charity. So when it comes to the community, that community psychology and that community approach is very much my, it's me. So I was like, okay, this is the job for me. I applied and I saw that it was band four, I mean band five, and it's a trainee. And so when I graduate, I automatically go to band six. So then,
This
so
is
literally,
fantastic.
and it's also a master's on top of that. So it's like a
Oh.
you get a master's. So essentially you get double. So I'll have two masters, and then, and I'm on band six. And then if I want to go into clinical psychology, I would already have been on the band six, which a clinical psychology trainee is. So then
You're not
who
getting a
knows?
dip in salary. You're getting the
Exactly.
same.
I could potentially jump into this on a higher spine, potentially. I don't know how it works, but look, from what I hear. But yeah. So thinking about right now how amazing the job is, but also thinking about the future, it just made a whole lot of
Makes
sense.
sense.
So I applied for that too. And I got the interview, and it was amazing. I did it, and there was a point where I had to choose between those
Whoa.
two. And so I think out of all 7 to 8, I don't remember exactly, interviews that I got three positions. So I had to turn one down straight away, because it was somewhere I did not want to be. And
I won't ask for
yeah,
details.
it was just somewhere I did not want to be. And then because I applied everywhere, all around the country. But yeah, so it was somewhere I did not want to be. And these two, and the one in Bristol and the one here in London. So I had to make that choice. So I come back to London, where my family is, the rest of me is. Do I stay in Bristol? So I made the choices to come here, and yeah,
Back
this
to
is me now.
the big back to London.
This is me now.
So tell me a bit more about that, the clinical associate psychologist role. You've been doing it for a little while now. How long has it been? Like, what, 6 months?
I started in like realistically, I started in early February.
Oh,
So
okay. So it's actually
March, April.
been
Yeah, 3 months.
about 3 months. I don't
Yeah.
know why I thought it was 6 months. Wow, time is really going. What is it like? And what kind of work and projects and people and how does it fit into the bigger plan as well?
As it currently stands, obviously me not having had prior experience in a clinical setting such as this, I'm working in the community. So it's a community service. So I'm not on a ward. Now the bulk of my experience has been ward based. So the risk assessments are different. The pretty much everything is different. Now I'm working in the community. Now I've worked in the community before, but it didn't have the framework of the NHS. As in like it didn't have the I wasn't working under a framework. So I was working basically freestyling in the community. Now I'm working in the community, but there's a framework. So yeah, it's challenging, because you have to unlearn certain things, or you have to understand certain things and adapt certain things. But it's really great. I'm co-leading my first sort of like DBT group, dialectic behavioral therapy group.
Brilliant.
We are. I've also been tasked with mapping mapping the services, the mental health services available in the community within my particular borough. So that's what I'm kind of doing. And obviously getting in contact with them and trying to establish a relationship between my recovery team service and that community service in order to be able to work. It's all about co-production with this role. That's one thing I really love about it. It's all about co-production with this role. So it's like, so that's what we're doing. So that's the work that I'm doing right now. And obviously, you know, the training, it's ongoing training, training how to use Rio, training how to use System One, training how to use just these various things, learning more about DBT skills. So it's like, it's only been, it's literally only been 3 months realistically. And the first half of those 3 months, I was working from home. So I never got the chance to truly know. Now I'm working 2 days from university, from home, and I'm also and so essentially I'm working 3 days and then 2 days I'm at university.
Hang on. Are you finishing your other masters first before
But look, like I said, all things are possible when you want
Are you finishing your other masters and starting another one at the same time?
The other one is let's just say it's
in the pipeline.
It's pretty much set. So it's done. And this this is the main one. So now I'm in at UCL, or else I don't think I would have been able to survive. It's just a few things to sort of like tie up, and then I graduate from that in February next year. Next year in February, I graduate from that, from the one in Bristol. That's because there's just a delay for master's graduation. Even though I'm done, it's like, And then I graduate from the one at UCL probably in June, I'm assuming, or June or July, I'm assuming. So I'm going to have two graduations next year. I'm looking forward to that.
And you deserve it, to be honest.
It's going to be a celebration.
With the one at Bristol, what was that in?
Applied neuropsychology.
Wow. So you got that clinical, the scientific, all of... I'm sure you looked at many MRI, PET scans, all the scans.
Oh, man. The neuropsychological assessments that we do, the different batteries, the different things. And obviously, just, you know, and the thing is, it's funny, but when you have a lens of a social activist, you see the cracks in establishments. Like, you see how biased the norms of neuropsychological assessments are. They're so biased that then they're not great at picking up things, various mental health disorders within. Some of them may not be great at picking up mental health disorders within specific groups, different populaces, and and groups. So it's like learning about that. And then obviously the masters now at UCL is extremely clinical. And
what's that one in?
It's the masters is called, it's an MSc in clinical associate psychology.
Oh, okay.
So it's it's a master's, but it's more of an apprenticeship. So we have every module, we have two assessments. Mm-hmm. One that is done very much in collaboration with our workplace. So it's we do an assessment, and then we write a reflective account on that. We do a formulation. We learn how to formulate on things. We learn how to carry out interventions. So essentially, like I said, it's we're like baby clinical psychologists.
I was going to say it's very much training you similarly to how you would be trained the clinical doctorate. It's the same. Exactly. It's the same thing. You go to uni some days.
Pretty much in a sense. That's from my understanding. Of course, I have to preface the fact that who knows? I might be misunderstanding certain things, but from what I understand, this is what this is. It's great. It's great. To say that I'm pretty busy would be an understatement. Yeah, I'm pretty busy.
I'm just happy. So, background to anyone listening: Yannick and I used to work together in one of our many initiatives called the BIP Network, which I've spoken about before on the podcast, I think. So we worked together, just like Jason and I. He's episode 5 or episode 8. He's the training educational psychologist, was on the podcast last year. So Yannick was a former director. And so I knew about his new role before he started it. And then now it's really nice to hear how aligned it is with what you wanted, but also it allows you just to consolidate all of that learning that you've done on the masters and all the learning you've done practically with all the work experience before, like starting as the play associate.
Child-centered play therapist.
Child-centered play therapist.
A lot of names in psychology. No. A lot of names and titles in psychology.
Just going to be cheeky. And mm-hmm. I feel like you did a little bit of a skip. Like you came in on the podcast at a point where you're like, yeah, I had to start uni a bit later. I'm a mature student. First of all, you're not that much of a mature student. Technically, you probably would have started your undergrad, but you weren't like... I remember when I did my undergrad and I thought anyone over the age of, we didn't have that many mature students to be fair, but anyone over the age of like, I don't know, 23 was ancient. Yeah. But yeah. Actually looking back, that's only like what, 3 or 4 years out of everybody else. But yeah, when you talk about mature student, how much older were you than everybody else when you did your undergrad?
For like 4 or 5 years.
Okay, that does...
Five, six, 5 years.
That
five
is years. A, I suppose when it comes to, yeah, undergrad, it, that can be a lot. Like, that must have been interesting. And this is where we spoke about like the microaggressions, and I'm sure the microaggressions, they were mainly race, don't get me wrong, race and gender. But then there's also that hidden kind of barrier of, oh, he's a mature student. Like, are we going to vibe with him the same? Is he going to, he's old, even though everyone knows that you weren't old, but to remind of an 18-year-old.
I'm told I have an old face, so maybe.
To remind of an 18 or 19, or at that point, it would be 20-year-old.
Yeah.
You're like, wow, there's a mature student here. But you're not actually that old in comparison.
I guess so. Yeah, no, I guess so.
What was that like? You've already explained what it was like being in a desert, being in the wilderness. But did that change your perception? Do you feel like, if you were younger, if you went in straight at 18, 19, what would your experience would have been and how would you have embraced the learning? Because I know now, as an undergrad, it was difficult for me because I was literally fresh out of school. So my experience, I was like a deer in headlights. Like, I didn't know what was going on for a year and a half. But
It's so funny how hard it is to answer this question, because if I had gone to university earlier, it basically would have meant that some of the experiences that have shaped who I am today would not have occurred.
Yeah.
So then I would technically be a different person. And I really don't know how I would have interacted with it.
Okay. That's fair.
So some of the events my life changing events or things that I was enduring would not have happened at all. And but at the same time, I don't know, maybe it's just because one can only be fully aware of the present, but I feel as much as I wish that I started earlier and I made it in that early stage and I was doing exactly what I'm doing right now at like 25. I think I've been lucky in my journey.
Yeah.
And whether it's because I've made informed decisions, whether it's because I was able to take feedback and to take advice and to really listen to it. And or whether it's because I just made the right choice. Life can sometimes be a fluke. And I've been very lucky. Just like I said, like I applied to 19 places. Mm-hmm. I did 19 applications and I got the best job I could possibly get out of that entire lot.
Yeah, you did.
I skipped from being a band 3 HCA straight to a band 5 clinical associate. So it's like I've been relatively lucky and I'm grateful for that. So it's like, so as much as there was a delay, when I got started, I really got started.
Yeah. You don't have to tread water for so long in
exactly,
the middle.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So even in terms of even in terms of my career and my life, I work within the NHS, right? That is my career. That is what I want to do. There's a goal there. Clinical psychology is the ultimate goal. Clinical neuropsychology is the ultimate goal. But at the same time, on the side, I have my own, like, I have my own initiative. Like, as in, like, I have a co-founder. I have a team. And we're doing things that I probably would not be able to freely do within the NHS. So, and obviously I'm going to have to learn in the future how to navigate being, because once I get qualified, I am now under a governing body. And when you're under that body, there are things that you cannot necessarily, I mean, I'm not saying I'm doing anything that would breach any sort of clause or whatever.
Any BPS guidelines, no.
Exactly. I'm not doing anything of such, but it's like, you have to consider, like, you know, the extent to which you're vocal in social media, the extent to which you're this. There's, for every action, there is a reaction. That is literally how the world works. So yeah, I guess that's, I don't know if I'm clear enough in what I'm saying, but it's,
no,
like,
you are being clear.
Yeah, that's basically just things to consider. So I'm quite happy. I'm quite happy. You know, there's a duality in terms of my professional career. Like, there's the NHS Yannick.
Yeah.
And then there's the Black People Talk Yannick. And all the other social things that I do in my spare time.
So, I think both of those things can coexist, and plenty of people that, you know, work within the NHS or work within professions, especially in psychology, do have other other initiatives that they run. I mean, you know, at the BIP network, we're full of them. Like, everyone has like what, three or four initiatives they run alongside during their day job.
The BIP team is winning. There's I've never seen such active people.
Never. Like, neither me.
It's inspiring. And the thing is, you get into a team like that, everyone has something. Yeah. Everyone is doing major things that are going to change the landscape of the field in some way.
Yeah.
So, and it's inspiring to see.
Definitely. And it's definitely doable. And I think long may it continue. I mean, obviously most people wouldn't want to have several things going on at once, but at the same time, if your passion and your time, and you can organize yourself to enable you to have to express different side of yourself, why not? I think you're doing a fantastic job. I'm seeing the growth of Black People Talk initiative generally. I think you've done fantastically since September time. It's growing really well, and it sounds like you're also doing fantastically in your main job as well. I just wanted to ask, what are your future plans? That's it. I nearly forgot that one.
Ooh. Well, future plan is to continue growing within my role, be the best cap that I can be, continue along that path. Potentially later on down that road, apply for the DCLIN, get onto the DCLIN. Yeah. Potentially, yeah. It's an interesting thing in terms of the whole clinical neuropsychologist, is because when I was doing my master's, basically we had clinical psychologists that would come and do the master's with us. And then when they would graduate from that master's, they would now be clinical neuropsychologists.
Right.
So obviously the academic director mentioned something about how maybe somewhere down the line, because we've already done this master's, and especially if we do, because we've already done this master's, it might be a thing where there's only a refresher that's needed to qualify as that, or something along those lines. He's working really hard at potentially making that happen. So I think that would be great, because then I would do the DCLIN, but I would have already, you know, fulfilled done what needed to be done before. So that would be really great. And then obviously for BPT, for BPT, I see a lot, Black mental health, Black well-being, It's a passion of mine, and so it is for my co-founder and the rest of the team. Like we are passionate about this. Like I see research, I see putting all of my publications under that. I see a lot. I see, and right now we're very much focused in the academic sort of like world. And when I say academic, I say higher education, university, and things like that. But
So the last question is all about advice that you would give to somebody, maybe like an 18-year-old or someone who's a mature student who wants to go the same route as you. What three tips would you give them based on things that you've learned to help them through? And I mean mainly psychology, but mainly the actual pathway to being
I
psych.
would say try your very very best to figure out what you want to do, and then stay the course. It takes it with just as with everything, it takes time. And for some people, depending on who you are, the odds aren't necessarily always stacked in your favor.
Absolutely.
So if you stay the course, but also, yeah, don't be afraid to take chances. Obviously, with BPT, I took a chance from an early stage, and I continued. There were times when I was thinking, okay, this might not be something that this might not be something that we that would work out, or it's just going to fizzle out into nothingness. Like a lot of other like student-led initiatives within a university. But then obviously you meet people that believe in your sort of like dream, and then you have these conversations, and then they join you, and then the thing just keeps growing. And so it's like, I think it's just try to make your own opportunities. And this, and
Absolutely.
I don't mean that by, set up your own thing. I mean, in a sense of, if let's say, for example, you really want to get some experience in something, feel no way about calling or sending an email. Honestly, just
Absolutely.
sending an email. And if it works, it works. If it doesn't, it doesn't. That's it. It not working is probably the most you could, it not working is probably the worst thing that can happen. Or someone just saying no is the worst that can happen. But then you're nowhere worse off than you already were at the very beginning. So yeah, I would say that. And try to, in terms of, that's in terms of your actions, things you need to do, as in like, that's, yeah, your forward moving, forward motion. But then in terms that you also need to think about your sort of like defending, protecting, sustaining yourself. Find your tribe,
That's a very
as
fair
in
point.
like find your tribe, because it's like there's no one just keeps going and going and going and going without necessarily taking a moment of respite to heal and to like catch your breath or
Absolutely.
something like that. So find your tribe. There are people that have gone this road before you that might help you along the way. And yeah, so just find your tribe. Get mentors, get people that have done it before, let them speak to you, get people that are going on the same road as you are, and then band together and do that. I think that's another good one. It's like utilize people in your community, that
Absolutely.
people in the same journey as you, that and use these people, and then let these people use you in order to sort of like advance the entire thing.
And this is what I like about where we are in time. When I was doing my undergraduate, there wasn't organizations like Black People Talk, there wasn't organizations like the Black Business Psychology Network, there wasn't organizations like BIP. So you would find one person at one conference, you'd find a few people on your undergrad that are on the same page, but it was literally like drip feeding. Like, honestly, it was like, again, I was in the wilderness. I didn't understand. So that is why I set up Black Business Psychology Network. And then I connected with Keisha with the BIP Network. And then obviously the work that you're doing for Black People Talk. It's so refreshing to see that there are places to go now. You're not just there by yourself in the library. Like, how on earth am I supposed to do this? Like, how do I even get here? There's a wealth of people that have done it before. There was that before, but it was just hard to find them. To be honest, it was like scouring through LinkedIn or Googling random word combinations to find some people that can help you. So utilize the networks, and there are a lot more networks. BPS is great as well, because you can meet people and other, you know, I know there's like clinical psychologist associations, etc., and all for the other. I'm sure there's even AP ones for assistant psychologists and PWP ones for psychological well-being practitioners. So find people and just talk to them. And, you know, what's the worst that can happen? Someone might not reply to your email. Someone might,
exactly,
you know, say they don't have any opportunities for you at the moment, but at least you've made that connection and you've tried. Brilliant. Well, thank you so much for your time. It's been fantastic having you.
Thank you for having me.
And catching up. And stay tuned, everybody, for another episode that should be coming soon.